And you're live.
Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BAMF podcast. This is your host, Mike Lafferty. And I'm here today with a veritable Algonquin roundtable of RPG industry luminaries. And we're going to talk about World War II comics and how they make for great superhero gaming. And let me start off with Walt Rebillard, our frequent co-host and often host of this podcast. How you doing, Walt?
Under-caffeinated, but ready to go.
Hey, glad to have you. Glad to have you. After Walt, in my list of Zencaster invitees, we have Chris McLaughlin of Green Ronin fame. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm all right. And we should remind anybody who is a Philistine and doesn't know that Chris wrote Golden Age for Second Ed, Mutants and Masterminds. So he knows of which he speaks. And Chris, is there any chance of a Third Ed conversion for that, or is that too early to say yet?
Well, if anybody bought the Game Master's Guide, there's like seven verbatim pages from my book in that third edition Game Master's Guide, which pretty much give you the basics of how to run a Golden Age Champions game. Oh goodness, I'm stealing Darren's thunder. Mutants and Masterminds. Yes, Golden Age Mutants and Masterminds game. And so far as I know, that's all that's planned. But if you buy my book and the Game Master's Guide and read those uncredited pages, you should be good.
All right, cool. Next up, we have Mr. Darren Watts. How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
Okay, and I hate to ask you to do this again, but could you, if some of our listeners aren't familiar with your background, could you give them just a brief resume?
Sure. I am the former president and co-owner of Hero Games, publisher of Champions and many other fine products. I wrote for them. I wrote Champions Universe, Millennium City, Before Bay, Until, a bunch of products for them. I also wrote Lucha Hero and a few other non-Champions books for them. I'm not working directly for Hero anymore. I got out of the owning things business, but I continue to do some freelance stuff. And most recently, I am in the middle of a Kickstarter for Golden Age Champions, which is the Champions source book for World War II and slightly before and after. The second such book for the Champions line. The first one came out back in the early 90s. So it's clearly time to have another one, and it's always been kind of my favorite period. When I'm not doing that, I also write for other companies, most recently for Doctor Who.
All right, cool. Well, hey, thanks for joining us, Darren. Of course, we're gathered here today to talk about your new Kickstarter, Golden Age Heroes, and we'll jump into that deeply here in just one second. Last but not least, we have Jacob Blackman joining us in the panel today, and Jacob is an incredible artist and a great writer. Active in the RPG industry for several years now, and doing a lot of work for Rogue Genius Games, specifically for superheroes, which is kind of our focus. Jacob does the Superpowered Legends and Iconic Legends lines, which are... Jacob, why don't you describe those?
The Superpowered Legends series is basically an homage to various different comic characters. So if you want to create a character that is well-known from comics, you will more than likely find one of them in the Superpowered Legends series for Mutants Masterminds or Iconic Legends for Icons. If you have in mind an insect-powered hero who uses web-slinging weapons, you'll find that within our ranks, and we've got a ton of products for that, and a ton still more to come.
All right, cool. Glad to have you, Jacob.
Thank you for having me.
So, just getting started off, we want to talk about World War II comics, specifically as, fodder for superhero gaming. We were talking before the podcast how, this in terms of like modern gamer temperament and, ideas, it's really like the more modern takes on World War II that make for good gaming, whereas some of the original Golden Age stuff might not really lend it so well for front of the tabletop. Darren, could you delve into that a little bit?
I'm sorry, can you give me the question again?
We were talking about the preference for trying to base superhero gaming on modern World War II comics as opposed to the actual old Golden Age comics.
Right. A lot of the period stuff, things actually published during the period, don't actually make for good gaming at a modern table. Almost all of the superhero team comics actually published in the period basically are framing stories. They begin with a couple of pages where the heroes are all together, they find out about a problem, and then they immediately split up and go off and deal with some portion of the problem in their own, you know, as a solo adventure. And then they meet up again at the very end of the comic to, you know, like punch out the final bad guy or share the clues that they've gathered and figure out the mystery or whatever. And obviously that leads to bad gaming. That's not, you can't separate players at the table that way. So they have very little to actually work with as inspiration. It's much easier to take inspiration from the from a lot of the retro comics that are based in, you know, on the stories of those periods. Roy Thomas's Invaders or All-Star Squadron, James Robinson's Starman, a lot of the Justice Society stuff, other series that draw on those characters, draw on those concepts, but tell a superhero story in a more modern style. That is something that modern players can kind of like get their hands around and enjoy doing. You also have the advantage, you know, certainly of, you know, the actual period comics obviously are also, you know, kind of from a different time period, and therefore they're a bit racist, they're a bit sexist. There's just a, you know, a bunch of things that it's much easier to, you know, like looking at it from a modern period to just kind of like elide over or, you know, address the issue in a more, with a more modern sensibility than, you know, anything that was actually published at the time.
Okay, cool, cool. If we were to talk about, you know, places where you find inspiration when you're writing World War II superhero stuff, what would be some artists or series that, or writers you'd want to call out?
From the time period, I'm an enormous fan of Captain Marvel. I think it's the greatest comic series of the 40s. C.C. Beck and the other people who worked on it, it was the best written, and it was also at the time the most popular. Captain Marvel actually outsold not only every other comic book on the stands, but it was the single biggest selling item at Military PX. It outsold Time and Life and other, you know, like adult magazines. I'm also a big fan of Will Eisner, so I love the Spirit, and I love all of his other characters and stuff that he did for Quality, Dollman, and a few other things that he did. I'm an enormous fan of Jack Cole, so I love Plastic Man, and I love the, you know, all the old Justice Society and the Timely characters as well. So.
Now, talking about all these old characters, do you feel that the stories of the Golden Age translate to some of the stuff that we're looking at today? And can you use those? Can you use those stories to tell modern stories at the game table?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's a sizable portion of the period is the world at war, right? So, I mean, you can tell war stories, you know, of any sort, and you can look at World War II and the period around it through an infinity of different lenses, you know, to transpose modern issues and that sort of things onto them. You can talk about racism. You can talk about, you know, like the, you know, not only like the awful racism of the Nazis and the Japanese at the time, but you can also talk about the internment camps that we had right here in the U.S. One of the members of my sample hero team in Golden Age Champions is a Nisei, who is in fact actually fighting for a country that is currently imprisoning his family. So, you know, you get to kind of like address some fairly serious and fairly deep issues within what is, you know, usually a pretty lighthearted medium.
And to look back on all that stuff, what kind of process do you go through to write a book like Golden Age Heroes? Is it a lot of like research in addition to reading comics?
Yes, absolutely. It's research, but I mean, it's research that I've been doing my entire life. World War II is kind of like one of my favorite eras of study. You know, not just the superhero parts of it, all of the pop culture, all of the military history and everything. So I'm kind of drawing on, you know, 40 years of loving the period and being interested in it. You know, I have a very sizable, you know, collection of books and magazines and that sort of thing from the period to draw on. So it's not like that's work for me. That's always kind of like been there. So.
And Chris, do you find the same thing? Do you find that that this is also a favorite age to research, and because of that, the research for when you did your Golden Age entry, was it similar?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've never done more research for anything other than like defending my master's thesis and things like that. You know, you'd have to get into the truly academic to compare the amount of research that I did for Golden Age. I've always said that book nearly killed me, but it would have been ruled a suicide, because I was really enjoying the hours I was spending immersing myself in that era and that culture. So yeah, absolutely. But as far as how it translates, I think it translates very well, because Golden Age, the thing that's always grabbed me about the Golden Age is how primal and pure it is. You know, it's find your way to the bad guy and punch him in the face. And it doesn't really seem to matter if it's a gangster or Hitler. And to me, if you've ever done like a hey, let's punch some bad guys game, you know, it really doesn't matter what era you've seen it in. You're, in a way, you're paying homage to the Golden Age with just by simply, let's get to some action. Let's make this fun. Let's make it quick. Let's make it happen.
Right. Superhero stories are always wish fulfillment stories, right? But they were Indeed. Never more so than they were in the Golden Age. You know,
Indeed.
Getting superpowers, there are no Marvel-type characters for whom getting superpowers makes their life a drag, right? It's not, you don't have Spider-Man's problems, you don't have the Thing, you don't have the Hulk, or any of those kind of characters. Getting superpowers is an unalloyed, awesome thing, and basically you can just go out now and fix the world and set it right with these, you know, like wonderful gifts that you've been given. And it's a very, you know, kind of like lighthearted sort of wish fulfillment storytelling that's very therapeutic, I think, for a lot of people.
Now, with all that in mind, what about the Golden Age of comics keep to it, us back to it? I mean, we saw a lot of the public domain heroes getting translated to Project Superpowers. You have guys like Brian Buccioletta, who did the Black Bat. I mean, we've even seen Dark Horse Comics do Black Beetle. What about this era keeps drawing us in?
Well, the core characters of it are still around, right? And so, I mean, we're talking about some of the greatest individual characters ever made. I mean, Superman's a Golden Age character. Batman is a Golden Age character. Captain America is a Golden Age character. So these characters still have something to tell us because they were so brilliantly designed in the first place. And now writers for 60, 70 years, 80 years after the fact, continue to spin these new changes and work with the original themes. But these themes were present in the characters from the very earliest days for the most part. So it's, you know, I think people kind of appreciate the quality of the writing, the quality of the imagination that went into the creation of these characters, even when the stories themselves are kind of like goofy and lighthearted and were clearly, at least at first, intended for little kids, that we still kind of like see what was in them, you know, that like sparked all of those imaginations all that time ago.
But yeah, I'm sorry.
No, jump in there.
Oh, you just reminded me of one of the things that I tried to get across in my Golden Age book was the fact that if you really take a step back and look at it, every single comic book superhero story you're going to tell is a different variety of goofy. To me, there isn't that much difference than doing like a straight Golden Age campaign where the morality is black and white and everybody that's good is totally good, everybody that's evil is totally evil. To me, that is no less goofy than doing like a hyper modern, you know, super gritty realistic thing where, you know, you roll a D6 for character motivation. It's like 1, pervert, 2, racist, 3, racist pervert.
Right.
You know, to me, rejecting the idea, to me, making everything black and white is just as silly as everything being some shade of dark.
Sure. Well, it's simplistic. It's one-dimensional. And
yes.
If you're going to tell a one-dimensional story, that from my point of view, that one dimension should be like a fun one, you know? But like I said, I also, I don't, when I'm actually playing at the table, I allow our characters to actually be more multidimensional than a character would be in a, you know, actual period comic, right? I don't necessarily want them to be, morons, right? I mean, I don't want them to be, you know, like, simple, but I do want them to be telling stories. I mean, like, World War II was kind of one of the last times where everybody was pretty much on the same page about right and wrong as far as, as far as that went. And that is a very kind of, like, refreshing attitude, I think, to bring to the table.
Oh, yeah.
And looking at that, can we take a look at what comic or writer from that time period, the creator working that genre? Can you guys pick out one and highlight one that illustrates the age for you? Starting with Darren.
For me, it would be C.C. Beck. He was the the great Captain Marvel artist, and also wound up writing sizable portions of it. And the depth of imagination, just like the sheer craziness of the stories, and yet they all always held together, and they were all kind of anchored by Cap himself, who was, kind of like the greatest straight man in comics. He managed with all of the insanity that was going on around him, with talking tigers and mad scientists and robots and gods and the most screwed up pantheon of gods that you've like ever, read in one place. He is still a totally regular guy. He is still, like this kind of idealized, because he's what a kid wants a grown-up to be, right? I mean, he is the ultimate fantasy wish fulfillment of the 10-year-old boy who wants to, when he wants to be, can be an adult and be taken seriously and be super competent in everything. It's kind of like everything about the wish fulfillment of superheroes boiled down to a single character. And that, I think was absolutely the greatest creator for that.
Awesome. Professor McGee.
Well, I certainly have no quarrel whatsoever with Darren's choice. I think that's a superb choice and very eloquently spoken for. But so I'll go elsewhere just for variety's sake and give some what I consider to be some well-deserved credit to the one and only Gardner Fox, who was sort of DC's go-to guy during that period. Respect to Bill Finger and all the great stuff that he did with Batman and the Batman mythos. But the fact that Gardner Fox worked on so many of DC and All Americans characters and was able to tell so many different types of stories. And if you take a step back and look at his whole writing career, I mean, apparently Gardner Fox at one time was writing erotica. I have no interest in reading it, but just the fact that, here was a guy who, took all knowledge to be his province, like Sir Francis Bacon, and could write like these really, 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 really goofy fairy tale-ish stories, do something which was the 40s version of hard science. And then, on the side, he was writing sex manuals. I respect a guy that can be that creative for that long and for so many years. To have that breadth of knowledge and to be able to work in a business for that amount of time, really, as a working writer, I have to absolutely respect what he did there. And if you want to track down his stuff, he wrote the bulk of the original All-Star Comics run. And he was succeeded by
the Silver Age. He wrote the bulk of the first 30, 40 issues of Justice League.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Now, I will say just from a quality standpoint, I'm a little more fond of Bob Kaniger's run on All Star, but you can't. But I mean, you don't get to a Bob Kaniger's run if Gardner Fox hadn't been pumping out 32, 33 quality issues that people wanted to buy. So respect to Gardner.
Right on. How about it, Jacob? Favorite creator or favorite comic from that age?
Unfortunately, I have to admit that I have never read any actual comics from the 30s and 40s and 50s. I haven't read any of those titles. I am familiar with them from reading character backgrounds and reading encyclopedias of Marvel and DC, but I've never read any of the actual comics themselves. My introduction to the Golden Age was reading The Invaders, which was the 70s series.
That was mine, yeah. Too. That and the giant-sized Justice League that would reprint Justice League.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my Golden Age influence is always going to be the Invaders, because I thought that was a wonderful comic, you know, getting the most powerful and greatest Golden Age heroes and throwing in a couple of the smaller, lesser known heroes and getting them onto a team. I thought that was wonderful, and especially because they actually took it to the Nazis. They went into Europe and fought Nazis and other enemies of the United States, whereas from what I've read about actual Golden Age series, they didn't do that much. Most of what they dealt with were, you know, saboteurs on the home front and other villains that were pretty much in the United States.
Well, you saw it every now and again. But like, for instance, there's an issue of All-Star Comics where the Justice Society basically goes to Berlin and Tokyo and wipes out the Axis powers in the space of one issue.
Right.
But, you know, you talk about painting yourself.
Doesn't matter. Right.
Yeah. And talk about painting yourself into a corner as far as like being a writer. I've ended the war that's still going on in real life. Oh, man, where do I go from here?
Yeah, the only thing that I might have changed with the Invaders is, you know, providing some more Golden Age villains, because they did it pretty well for the Germans. They had a nice selection of German villains.
Yeah.
But none for the Japanese or the Italians. They didn't really branch out into the other Axis powers. Because, you know, most of the Japanese villains you see in Golden Age Marvel are just, you know, the evil general.
The logistical reason for that is many more army soldiers that they had easier access to PXs, and so the army soldiers were much more likely to be reading comics than Navy. They just had easier.
But they could have changed that for the Invaders series in the 70s.
So, Walt, if we were to ask you your favorite World War II superhero media, what would you say?
I started going back and reading a lot of the, going back online and reading a lot of the public domain stuff after seeing Project Superpowers, because I wanted to see where all of those characters came from. Recently, though, I've been doing there's a great webcomic, and we've had the boys on the show before to talk about their webcomic. It's called The Specialists. They just did a Kickstarter not too long ago for an omnibus edition, but they release a page every Monday, and it's these two guys who are into the same thing we are. They love comics, they love role playing games, just every Monday I can geek out about superheroics in World War II and some of the things that they face. Like earlier we were talking about, you know, can you tackle modern issues in a World War II or a Golden Age era game? And one of the main characters, one of my favorite characters of the series, every time he goes on a mission, he always wears this this helmeted mask, and he does it for two reasons. Number one, he does it to inspire people, like, hey, under this mask, it could be you. But the other thing is that he's a black man from that time period. So he wants to be taken seriously, and he feels, part of his makeup of that character is he feels that if he takes that mask off and displays to the outside world that he's a man of color, he won't be taken seriously. So, I mean, it's a great series, a lot of fun, art's fun. So, I mean, that's what I've been checking out lately. How about it, Mike? How about you?
Garth Ennis has been writing a lot of great World War II comics, and they aren't really, you know, superhero. But check out his Battlegrounds. I think it was from Avatar. That's really great. Or he did a series recently, it might have been from Image, called The Dreaming Eagles, about the Tuskegee Squadron. And, the Red Tails, you saw the George Lucas movie. And it's Garth Ennis writes great war comics. I'm not always crazy about his superhero work, but just great, great war comics. Definitely, it's most of my reading these days has been World War II comics and the occasional superhero here and there for the last month or two. But I said in a previous conversation with Chris and Darren that you know, that 5-minute segment in the middle of the first Avenger where Captain America and the Hellion Commandos are running across Europe blowing up Hydra bases. I think that might be the best example of superhero World War II media I can think of right off the top. I always loved that sequence.
I was half hoping at some point during that movie that they would break out with the Submariner and the android Human Torch, but I didn't get it.
That would have been nice. Maybe a Netflix series one day, who knows?
Oh, just take my money. I'll up my subscription for that. So speaking of Golden Age, speaking of what we're pushing on this, can we talk a little bit about the book that you have on Kickstarter right now? Can you talk about the original incarnation and what you're doing with the modern one?
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, it's the Kickstarter's for Golden Age Champions. It's got we're about 70% funded right now, a little above 70, and we've got a little more than 2 weeks left to go. So you know, we hope we can actually bring that to them and get into some stretch goals. We have some fabulous stretch goals, the first couple of which are just to make the book nicer. We want to put it in color and hardcover. And then beyond that, we have a bunch of some of my dearest friends in the industry who very much want to write some additional material, like Steve Long and Bruce Harlick and a few other people that we've got already lined up. Jason Walters is one of them. You know, please check it out, and we would be very grateful for your support. The original Golden Age, the very first Golden Age Champions, came out as a third-party product. It was done by Firebird, and it was very well received. But obviously, it was a small operation, and they didn't have much funding, so they didn't do a very large print run. And so Hero themselves liked it so much that they basically bought the rights to it and republished a new edition of that one in the early 90s. It's still Chris Cloutier's, book, but they kind of like cleaned up a bit of the art, changed a few things around in it, and just kind of like made it a nicer, prettier looking product, and put that out. And I believe that was in, I don't remember precisely the year, but it was the late 80s.
1994.
94, there you go.
I have the copy right in front of me.
Excellent. So that is the original edition. There hasn't been one since then. But since I was kind of one of the primary writers of the Modern Champions universe, for 5th and 6th Ed, I have always been including references all along to what I have, as the extended history of the Champions universe. So the stuff that I have written for Golden Age is very much tied into the current Champions universe, if you like that. There's, characters who are still alive from that period, characters who are, extended aging for whatever reason. There are characters who are the grandchildren of, supers in the 40s who are active today. So this book goes back and kind of like deals with that. It's very tied into like a kind of like the complete setting. So we'll talk about whatever it is about the Modern Champions universe that you're into, there will be some reference to it and the sort of things that it did in the Golden Age, the bad guy organizations, what they were up to in the 40s. You have the opportunity to actually meet Dr. Destroyer before he becomes Dr. Destroyer, because in his origin he was actually kind of a second tier mad scientist working for the Nazis during World War II. So you can kind of like meet him in game before he becomes, like the greatest villain in the setting. So there's a lot of lot of connection in there that's been planned over the last 15 years.
Now, in the new book, will we also have rules for a Golden Age game and how to craft those stories for a more diverse audience?
Yes, we will. The part of the advantage of being able to tell a Golden Age story in that kind of like retro lens is the ability to create an idealized situation, right? Is the ability to allow players to have a modern sensibility when it comes to things like racism, like sexism, and all of those things, and allow the players to kind of like hold to their modern moral sensibilities while still being able to kind of explore the historical situation and not leave those topics entirely out of the game.
Nice. And to establish that feel, who do you have doing the art for the book?
Well, we don't know. Storm Cook has agreed to do the cover and some interior pieces and the chapter headers, but that all presumes, of course, that the Kickstarter actually funds. So the real question is, if we fund and by how much tells me how much of an art budget that I have. I have a great many friends and other professionals in the industry who are raring to go on this, but I won't be able to formally answer that, you know, until we know what kind of art budget we have and who we're going to wind up using. So I've asked Storm to do the chapter headers definitely for this, and each of those chapter headers will likely be, once again, Bill Keyes and I will work this out, but what they're planning to do is each chapter would be an homage to a famous Golden Age title in the same way that the cover art that you've seen already is sort of an homage to Captain America number one, where the action is kind of flowing right to left across the panel and our hero is punching Hitler in the face. The interior chapter headers would all be swipes and homages to, for example, action number one, Superman shaking the bad guys out of the car, maybe we do a spirit homage where the chapter title is running down the side of a building and drifting off into a, you know, into a rainy gutter somewhere, that sort of thing. Something that is definitely in the style and is clearly recognizable. All of the artists are going to be asked to put those kind of homages in their work when they're doing this.
And are we looking at a complete color book or all black and white?
Once again, the answer to that is based on the success of the Kickstarter. One of the stretch goals is to turn it from black and white to color at the $30,000 funding level. So I hope that it will be in color, but that's kind of up to you guys. So, you know, with your support, I hope that we can make that happen and have some gorgeous color art for this.
The big question I have regarding the Golden Age Champions, is it going to have that magnificent 24-page history breakdown of the Golden Age era like the 94 version?
Actually, it's going to be better than the original one for it. I certainly love the original Golden Age Champions timeline, but in this case, I have turned for inspiration and style to Steve Long's Folk Hero timeline, which is even bigger and even more detailed and has even more stuff in it. And basically, I'm just carrying his pulp timeline forward from 1938 to 1950. So if you liked what he did in Pulp Hero, you're going to like this just the same. I thought that was an outstanding piece of work, and that was definitely what inspired me to make it the way that I did.
And are we going to see the current edition write-ups of the old characters, and will we see any new characters?
We are not reusing any of the characters from the original Golden Age Champions. None of those they don't even belong to us, actually, so I couldn't if I wanted to. But no, the book does in fact include over 60 brand new characters that I have created. It does include a fair amount of information also on characters and concepts and locations from the Champions universe in the modern day that, you know, might have existed back then and what it is that they're doing. So you get information on what Viper was up to, what Beeman was up to, what various immortal or long-lived characters are up to during the Golden Age period. But the bulk of what's in there is obviously the new characters that I've created. In a lot of cases, when I first planned the Champions Universe out, when I first wrote Champions Universe for 5th edition all those years ago, this sort of thing was already in my head. So there have been references all throughout the history of the modern Champions Universe to things that happened in the Golden Age. This has all been kind of like planned all along. So if you know Dr. Scarab from Bavor Bay, it says in his write-up that his grandfather was a Golden Age superhero. Well, this is the book in which you get to see that guy actually written up as Dr. Twilight. So, I've been very careful. I'm the keeper of continuity for the Champions universe, and I'm pretty sure it all does kind of, hold together.
While we're talking about the book on Kickstarter, Chris, Jacob, did you have any questions specific to the book for Darren?
No, he pretty much got what I was looking for. I'm really looking forward to this. This is going to be great.
No, I think we've been talking about this book off and on since I think the turn of the millennium. I just want my copy. That's
And how much of the Silver Age book have you kind of delved into?
Silver Age is going to replace Golden Age, obviously, as you know, like the president's project is what I work on when I'm not working on other things. And how long that's going to take? Well, that's I'm not really sure. Golden Age took 7 years to do because I was doing it in the background. You know, when I work freelance for other companies, I get paid up front or I get paid, you know, at the time, whereas everything that I do on these books is kind of, you know, work, you know, that's building towards doing a Kickstarter, so I don't get paid till the end of it. In that case, it's the kind of thing that frequently needs to be done, you know, nights and weekends and in and around other stuff because I just don't have the time to dedicate to it for it. But when it gets close, that's when I can commit to, you know, filling that time the way I've done with Golden Age recently and get that project finished and built towards the Kickstarter when all of that finally pays off for all of the creative people involved. So it's an investment in our time, and so that kind of has to happen on its own schedule. Silver Age will be done when it's done. Ideally, it won't take a whole 7 years, but I'm not making any promises.
Nice. Now, you've talked about some of the stretch goals to make the book prettier, you know, spruce things up. What are, if you guys, you know, blow through multiple stretch goals, can you talk about some of the other goals that are possible in the project?
Beyond the stretch goals that we have listed on the site, which, you know, beyond making the book look prettier, are working with a bunch of my best friends and other industry professionals that I respect tremendously to add additional material in the stretch goals that are already there. We have Jason Walters and Steve Long and Bruce Harlick and Rod Curry and Beth Limmels and a bunch of other people who will be adding their own kind of contributions. And should we blow past those, I'd be recruiting more people like Chris McLaughlin, like Steve Perrin and, you know, a bunch of other people to please come in and write some more material. We'll keep going, you know, as far as you guys keep going. We can keep finding more and more people to contribute to the book as we need to.
That would be wonderful just to see the reaction from all the people that assume that just because Darren and I represent the two biggest superhero systems, that for some reason it's all Crips and Bloods between M&M people and Champions people. Because we used to absolutely blow the minds of people at Gen Con, you know, when we would be seen hanging out and like chatting, you know, like not pulling knives on each other.
Nice.
Okay, well, we should talk about that because Steve was really excited about the possibility.
Against the Axis is a great book. A hero of a version of it should absolutely exist. I've in fact already talked to Steve. This shouldn't be linked together, right? I mean, there's no reason Against the Axis hero version needs to be tied to or wait for Golden Age. I've already put Steve in touch with Jason at Hero Games, and I've offered myself to help out with the Champions Complete versions of the character write-ups if that's necessary. So that's, you know, a thing that I totally hope happens. I'd love to see it. Steve does great work, and I'm a big fan of it.
Nice. So as we start rolling toward the bottom of the podcast, Darren, would you like to give us final thoughts about the Kickstarter?
Final thoughts? You know, I'm beside myself with happiness that this project is finally happening. I very much hope that we can get your support for this and make this into like the beautiful book that we very much all want to see. As I always say, Hitler's not going to punch himself, guys. We've got to be the ones to go out and do it. So, you know, please take a look at the Kickstarter project and please consider supporting it and keep them flying. Thank you all very much.
Nice. Professor McGee, final thoughts.
Give Darren your money.
How about it, Jacob?
I agree. Give Darren your money because I stopped working on a Superpowered Legends Golden Age the instant I saw that Golden Age book was going up. It was my own thing. I'll eventually get back to it. It's just, I think yours is going to be better.
glowing shouts of endorsement. So everybody needs to go out to Kickstarter immediately. We're going to put the that link in the show notes and back this project, because this needs to happen, because the Germans just can't win. This has been Walt, Chris, Darren, Mike, and Jacob, and you've been listening to the Banff Podcast.